Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible in part by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, 1-800-492-5538 is the number. We are joined here by John Wagner, reporter for The Washington Post, and Alexander Piles, reporter for The Daily Record, to talk about the referendum campaign spending. And John and Alex, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
410-319-8888 is the number. It's interesting, John, one of the things that you wrote in this morning's paper is about one of the major funders for the same-sex marriage campaign being for it was a Republican from New York.
Yeah, and that's actually a new contribution. As your listeners may know, there were a number of fundraising reports that came out tail end of last week, but this was not included in the $3.3 million that Marylanders for Marriage Equality, the lead group on the same-sex marriage referendum, reported. But, a guy named Paul Singer, who's a hedge fund manager in New York, has given $250,000, and he's been a donor to Mitt Romney, gave $1 million to the national GOP convention in Tampa. And so this contribution is being touted by proponents of same-sex marriage as evidence that there is, in fact, support among Republicans for this cause.
And lots. I think the campaign spending on these referendums is mind-boggling. I think that $53 million so far being spent on these referendums, $47 million of which, Alexander Pyle, is being spent on this gambling referendum alone.
Yeah, and it's almost split right down the middle between opponents and those in favor. You've got casino companies on both sides of this thing. You've got MGM that wants to build a casino in National Harbor, spending the bulk of some $23 million to prop up this gambling law that was passed by the Assembly. And then you've got Penn National, really the only group opposing this expanded gambling law, spending over $25 million. And you could really see the number go up. I mean, when you talk to folks who follow the gambling industry and you talk to politicians in Maryland, when this law passed, they expected Penn National to spend close to $40 million to prevent this expansion of casino gambling in Maryland. It's just a tremendous amount of money.
What's interesting to me, I'm curious how you see this, and Anthony, to jump in here with this, I mean, that the referendum that has spent the most money, this gambling referendum, $47 million, is the one that most people in Maryland are the least clear about.
Mm-hmm.
About how they even feel or whether they should vote upon it. And when we have these folks on the show, one of the questions I want to ask them, John, is why should people care? I mean, is this not just a battle between gambling giants? I mean, people are really confused about this issue.
So you're asking why should they care? I guess if you are... I can do my best to make a case for either side here, I guess.
I guess you could as a good reporter, yes.
Well, certainly if you are a resident of Prince George's or anywhere in the Washington region and you like to gamble, you would have a casino closer to you than you would otherwise. And MGM, which has been lined up to run the casino if it in fact comes to National Harbor, is promising a high-end resort that would have more than just slot machines and table games. It would have a hotel, a spa, meeting space, some retail, additional retail, and the hope would be that it would spur even more retail in the area as well, in addition to what's already there at the existing National Harbor development. The concerns on the other side are a little bit more diffuse. I mean, Penn National Gaming, which is the big funder of the opposition, stands to lose a lot at a casino it owns in Charlestown, West Virginia, if Maryland opens yet another large-scale casino in the region. There are also neighborhood and religious groups who are opposing this more strictly on the merits of gambling, that they say it will not be a positive for the community and that this really isn't the image that Prince George's wants to project, that the county doesn't want to be known as that place with a casino.
This is Anthony McCarthy. I'm very curious, Alex, about polling. There was a lot of talk while this was under consideration that the legislators in Baltimore were in there negotiating. Ultimately, everybody was in support of it. But I'm very curious at why it appears there was. I'm looking at some polling numbers online, and it shows that a majority, or at least speculation, that a majority of folks in the city of Baltimore are opposed to this. Are you surprised that these legislators aren't out there pressing the case more?
You know, I think you had a lot of Baltimore lawmakers that sort of held their nose as they voted this thing. The chairman of the delegation, Kurt Anderson, had really one of the most memorable quotes from this whole mess, saying that it felt very unclean to have all these talks about getting another casino in town. And I think you still have some people in the city who are worried that if there is a casino in Prince George's County, especially if it's at National Harbor, that the casino that's already been approved for Baltimore could suffer. Even though Caesars, which that's the lead group that's building this casino and would operate it, Caesars wants the expansion to go forward because then they can get table games, such as poker, and they can bring other events to this larger, hopefully more profitable facility from the way that they see it. But I think you have a lot of folks who are really worried that you're saturating the market if you put something at National Harbor and then up in Baltimore as well.
I wonder if, as you two have been reporting this, if you have other been surprised at the turn some of these referendums have taken beyond just the money. I mean, it seems the marriage equality referendum is one that that appears from certain polls to be moving in a direction people did not think would take. John Wagner, where you're seeing a large number of African Americans who at first were opposed now changing their votes, that the vote may be, Maryland may be, we'll see, the first state in the country to actually pass this referendum, a referendum like this. I mean, are you shocked by what you've seen, or what's your analysis of what you've seen?
I don't know that I'm shocked. I mean, just a word about polling generally is I think it's difficult to poll on some of these issues because for reasons you've touched on. In fact, I don't know that they're that well understood. So the way that the question is asked can make a big difference, and it's been asked in different ways in some of the recent polls you've seen. And the differences have been broader on the gambling referendum and on the DREAM Act, which is also on Maryland's ballot next month. And I think those questions or those issues are a little more nuanced or less understood than same-sex marriage, which people are more likely to have a view on one way or another. Though that said, there is at least some reason to believe that there is growing acceptance in the African-American community, at least to some degree. One caveat there, however, is that, in other states where this has failed, typically the opponents have really come in at the end and, had a TV blitz in the last few weeks, and we've yet to see that here. So to the extent that the gains in polling appear to be real, it's possible that they may be erased, at least in part, over the next couple of weeks, depending on how aggressively the opponents are able to mount their campaign.
I've been following these dollars, and as Mark said, it's really fascinating to see this, just the large amounts of dollars coming into Maryland over ballot questions. And I'm not sure if we've seen this in the past. I'm not even sure if we were structured enough to actually follow these dollars. But I was listening to the press conference held earlier today by Ben Jealous at the National NAACP. And I thought back, guys, Alex and John, on the early momentum on this marriage question was certainly on the side of the opponents. Remember, they turned in so many more signatures than they needed, and they were absolutely jubilant in the response they were getting from the African-American community. A basic question, and I don't know if it's a fair question for either one of you, but does money really make a huge difference when it comes to educating voters on these referendums, on these ballot questions? John?
I think it's different on different questions. I think it's hard to argue that the money hasn't made a difference on the gambling question.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back to 2008, when the state passed slots, when voters endorsed slots, the support was pretty overwhelming statewide. So I think most people assumed you'd see something similar this year with the expansion plan. Though all the negative advertising seems to be having some impact, given the polls, at least the public polls have been no better than even. In that respect, I think the money can matter.
Yeah, I think if you look at Penn National's history, in 2008 they spent about $38 million to stop a limited casino gambling program
right.
in Ohio.
That's true. Yeah.
Succeeded in doing so, that money certainly likely played a role there. Turns around the very next year and spends $23 million to support a program in which they were being assured of getting to bid for a casino license. So I do think that this money plays a role. And as far as the signatures to get these items on the ballot, you have to remember that the website, mdpetitions.com, really drove a lot of that, and you're seeing this money come in, I think, in part just because there are laws that were petitioned to referendum this year that may not have been in the past before this website came around and really made it kind of easy for mm-hmm. opponents to get these things on the ballot.
That's a really very important point. Gentlemen, we have to take a break because we're going to go to the break and sort of come out of the sun right now, and I want to thank, as usual, both your ability to come and join us and talk to our listeners, and the both reporting you do is really important, and I'm glad we can get it to the airwaves here. John Wagner, reporter for The Washington Post, and Alexander Piles, reporter for Daily Record, both of whom are two of our best reporters out there.
Excellent
reporters. Thank you
both
so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're now going to welcome Luke Broadwater from The Sun, who has been breaking these stories about the Peter Angelos backing the comptroller's lawsuit against the mayor. And Luke, welcome. Good to have you with us, man.
Hi, good to be here.
How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm very well. Good to have you with us. So talk a bit about what you just posted at 5:41 on The Sun website.
Anybody's been following City Hall in the past year has probably heard about the phone controversy, which has embroiled both the mayor's and the comptroller's office. And the latest wrinkle in that whole dispute, some people are dubbing it PhoneGate, is on Friday the comptroller, Ms. Joan Pratt, filed a lawsuit against the mayor, trying to seek a restraining order against her Office of Information Technology from installing any more phones, which she says are being done illegally and are wasting taxpayer dollars. And so today it came out that Mr. Angelos, Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles and, the prominent attorney, is indeed he's paying for this out of his pocket. He's providing the legal work for Ms. Pratt for free. So that's sort of the update today. Angelos has inserted himself into this story. He has picked a side, and he's funding a side. So it's pretty interesting for those people who follow Baltimore politics.
Folks, I want you to 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts on this. This is becoming a real battle between the comptroller and the mayor. Anthony, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask Luke, because you've been following this and you've been watching this, have you been surprised? I hear people, Luke, talking about this in my barbershop. I hear people obviously calling my show. They want to bring up the telephone, this phone gate issue. I have to tell you, as a political observer who watched this from the beginning, I remember saying on the air, this does not have legs. It's going to be resolved when the solicitor gives his opinion, and it wasn't. When the inspector general gave his opinion, it seemed like threw fire on this. I'm surprised that a phone system controversy has taken on so much interest in the public.
You know what? Me too. Because frankly, the last thing I want to write about is phones. But I'll tell you what, both sides have dug their heels in.
Yeah.
Both sides really, really want to win this thing. And each side sort of pays lip service to compromise, but then we'll never end up meeting with each other. So And really we're talking about, at the end of the day, about $7.5 million at stake, and which office is going to control that money and which contractors are going to get to control that money. And there have been all sorts of personal slights and vendettas throughout the way. Certain people feel like the mayor, you know, Ms. Pratt feels like the mayor has slighted her and won't meet with her. The mayor feels like Ms. Pratt should apologize to her and that she, you know, has basically called her out in public and tried to embarrass her in public. And so this has gotten very personal at times. And I think that sort of speaks to why both sides won't give an inch.
A couple things. I'm curious, folks. 410-319-8888 will come to these calls coming in. Yes, we will. I'm sorry, somebody just got a note from my producer. We will wrap on time. Don't worry. Get to our next segment. is it unusual for a private attorney and a firm like Peter Angelos's to take this on? I mean, is this a function of Joan Pratt, the controller, or is this a function of Joan Pratt, the political figure, taking on another political figure?
You know, that's an interesting question because Mr. Angelos has obviously taken legal action against the city multiple times and the state. You know, he opposes the state center development and he opposes the superblock development, at least in the way they're being done, and he has filed legal challenges to those matters. But in terms of one branch of government suing the other,
yeah,
that seems to be pretty unprecedented. I can't think of too many times covering local governments anywhere where you have different branches of government suing each other. It may happen from time to time. It just hasn't happened recently, and certainly not in Baltimore. But I do think that is a strange step, and it really speaks to how they cannot resolve these issues. And I think it's kind of, at looking at it as an observer, I think you have to sort of shake your head and why can't we work this phones thing out? Why can't people come together on it?
Especially if we're talking, Mark and Luke, about a city that is financially strapped, and we know it is. It is amazing to me. Now we know, thanks to Luke breaking this story about Angelos' involvement in his pro bono work. I thought it was also telling Luke this, the kind of, how can I characterize Ryan O'Doherty's response? He was real clear, this is nothing new, and they really would like for Joan Pratt to come to the table.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because here you have the mayor has offered her IT director, a man named Chris Tonges, to meet with Ms. Pratt. Ms. Pratt says, I'm not going to meet with Mr. Tonges until the mayor sits down with me. And the mayor says the mayor's not getting back to her and says, I'm not meeting with Pratt. So you have three people here that won't meet with each other for various personal reasons. And so, and what we have now is a lawsuit. We're going to have the city solicitor fighting Mr. Angelos in court. And I don't want people to think I'm speaking from my opinion here, but this is what the inspector general found, that that there was dysfunction here among the branches of government, and it was costing taxpayers money because they couldn't come together.
I mean, that's given the closing rec centers.
Yeah,
and all the rest, and the tightness of our budget. Let's go to the phone on 410-319-8888. Anthony McCarthy and I are talking with Luke Broadwater, a reporter for The Sun, who broke these stories about Peter Angelos taking on Controller Pratt's lawsuit against the mayor over who gets to create the video phones and who controls the money for the video phones in the city of Baltimore. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr.
Hi, Clarence. Welcome.
Very quickly, I have a past due gas and electric bill, and my roof needs repair and various other things, but I think I'll go buy this iPhone instead. That's what people are pissed off about. That's the bottom line. Our schools are in disrepair and numerous other things around this city, and you think $500,000 for some phones is appropriate at this time. That's what the issue is. I think that's why, Anthony, as you said, people want to talk about this because that's how they see it. Thank you.
Thanks. You, Clarence. And I think that, a lot of people, I think the response that of people in this city so far that I've heard to what Luke has been writing about is kind of being incensed and kind of flabbergasted that this is actually taking place.
The inspector, and it is a turf war. Let's be honest with that. It is a turf war. It has to do with whether the phones are going to be controlled by Ms. Pratt or Ms. Rawlings-Blake. And But there are some things that go somewhat beyond that. The Inspector General's investigation did find that there were numerous conflicts of interest, that there was a waste of taxpayer dollars, that there were, and that
a deputy mayor attempted to mislead or advise someone to mislead another.
That's right. That public officials lied and misled, or government officials lied and misled some lawmakers over the issue as well. So it's not as though this is just merely a turf war. There were some things that were wrong that were found. Now the Inspector General found that nothing illegal was done. Nothing that he found rose to the level of a crime. But that he did find several areas where taxpayer money could have been saved and where people weren't being honest.
Let's go get a call here before we have to move to our next subject. 410-319-8888. Ali, you're on the air.
Yeah. Good evening, Mark and your guests. I understand that this procedure could have perhaps been done better. We all agree upon that. But I think that this batching the mayor is really, to a degree, inappropriate. I know that a lot of these things are delegated, and until they blow up in your face, you rely and you trust people that you think that they're going to do the right thing. But I don't think we should have a batching party of the mayor. I think she's doing an overall good job, in spite of some of the things that have surfaced. And I think we focus too much on some negative aspect as opposed to some of the good things that she's trying to do for the city.
Ali, I appreciate the call. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, Ali. It was just because we're almost out of time in this segment, but I appreciate the call. I think I don't think anybody here is trying to bash the mayor so much as kind of really put this on the table to get to realize that there's this kind of interesting warfare, and does it benefit anybody in the city? Is the question people are asking, I think. Luke, a final thought from you before we have to break.
Yeah, it's to address the caller's concern. Whenever we are reporting, it's never personal. It's always professional, and it's about transparency and accountability and making sure our government officials are doing the right things. It's never a personal thing, and I don't want anyone to think that.
Luke's a great reporter, and I certainly know that that's true in his reporting. But Mark, also, I think at times people are uncomfortable with ongoing conversations about backroom deals and things like that. I don't think it's ever bashing, but we have to admit there's a culture that has to continually be exposed and held accountable.
And it's not just the mayor, it's many people
that's
in
right.
power, and that's
most
what we do
definitely.
Is to expose that and bring it to people's attention so we can raise the issues for people to see what needs to change and what is going on in our politics. Once again, Luke Broadwater, thanks so much for the work you do and for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
always
Luke.
A pleasure. Anthony and I got to take a break, and when I come back, we're going to be taking a trip to Theater Baltimore, as I like to say, and talking to the lead actors in the new play at Center Stage, Dion Graham and Kevin Kilner, about the play, the first one directed by Kwame Kwayarma as artistic director, Enemy of the People, which is a fantastic play. These guys are great actors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.